I remember when it came out, that story, and all the right wing was yapping about it. Alex Jones is a goddamn fraud. And all you guys that don't like Jews, well, he was married to a Jew, according to my information. Tell me if I'm wrong. He's in the middle of a big divorce right now. But the right-wing conservatives and a hell of a lot of the right-wing racists fall for his stories. Now, obviously, sometimes his stories are correct. But that's what a false flagger does. He hates you if you're a racist. He hates your ass. You call in and see sometime. Say, I'm Tom Metzger, and I'm a white racist. I want to talk to you. Get off my radio show, you goddamn Nazi. That's what you'll get. So quit being stupid and following guys that are false flags. Well, let's see what's up with America's favorite daddy, Bill Cosby. Favorite daddy. The Cosby Show. Cosby is now facing time in prison for allegedly sexual assault to women who probably deserved it because they submitted to it. Americans are having a hard time accepting the idea that a pop culture icon and country daddy could also be a long-time racial predator, not sexual predator. In this volatile racial climate, almost ready to break out into civil war, many black Americans are more concerned with Cosby's right to a fair trial than the victim's right to receive justice. Within the black community, whatever that is, conspiracy theorists claim Cosby was targeted after his second bid to purchase NBC. Boy, that would take a lot of money, man. Despite its owners confirming that the TV network was not for sale. Well, anything's for sale if there's enough money involved. This theory alleges Cosby's accusers are part of an elaborate plan to destroy his image and career, effectively ending his quest for power in the media. Yeah, see how that goes? Since 2014, more than 50 women, most of them white, have come forward and accused Cosby of sexual assault after they willingly went into his apartment and drank his drinks and everything else. I have no sympathy for any of those women. When you lay down with the dogs, you get up with the fleas, man. Though he was charged with sexual assault in the past and admitted to drugging women using Quaaludes with the intention of having sex with them, during a civil case he settled in 2005, Cosby's supporters maintained his current public scandal as a result of racism. Cosby's daughter described his impending trial as a public lynching, likening his downfall to a time in American history when black males were stalked and killed by lynch mobs at the slightest hint of sexual impropriety towards a white woman. And there were a lot of white women back then played the game too. They bedded down with black males, and then if anything went wrong, they screamed rape and stuff like that. So this is not new. In 1955, 14-year-old Emmett Till was viciously murdered. Well, I think any murder is vicious. You don't have to say viciously murdered. He was murdered for whistling at a white woman while visiting relatives in Moni, Mississippi. See, that's like over in North Korea with this kid. He shouldn't have done that. He brought on his own death. After his mother demanded an open casket funeral, photograph of Till's disfigured corpse were published in Negro Jet magazine. Decades later, his accuser revealed her story was fabricated. She might have been paid for that testimony, too. But that's the problem you've got. There's a lot of white women are the initiators of this stuff, and we shouldn't stand up for them. His murderer is acquitted by an all-white, all-male jury. color them bad stirred racial discord that still reverberates across America today. Till's death brought attention to the history of racial violence that characterized life in the South and underscored the problem of racism today. No, it's not living in the South, it's living next door to each other. If you have racial separation, really good racial separation, this stuff doesn't happen. The blacks will kill blacks and the whites will kill whites. That'd be fair. It is true that America has a disturbing legacy of murdering innocent black men, while also murdering innocent white men and white and black boys falsely accused of sexual assault. The mob flops both ways, you people. It's always the black. Oh, you're always picking on us. Well, working class people always get picked on, whether they're white or black. While there is a well-earned distrust of the criminal justice system when it comes to fairly prosecuting black males, well, it should be for whites too. Whites should suspect the criminal justice system because they get screwed just as much as blacks in the criminal justice system. Cosby's case bears no resemblance of what happened to Emmett Till. To compare his sexual assault trial to a lynching is irresponsible. Cosby's a 79-year-old celebrity, he's the same age I am, with a documented history of infidelity and sexual deviance. One-third of his accusers are black. Whoa! The majority are unable to press charges after exceeding their state statute of limitations. Cosby is not facing an all-white jury, and despite his criminal charges is still being heralded as a comedic legend. Oh, he said you're a funny guy. I remember when he used to play in that series with Robert Culp, where they were both tennis pros that went around the world solving problems. That was hilarious. So when did it become trendy to play the race card to help black celebrities avoid public scrutiny after being accused of a sexual assault? When did that start? After Nate Parker sold his film Birth of a Nation to Fox Searchlight for a reported $17.5 million, the film's release was marred by publicized details of his past rape trial. A former student athlete, Parker left Penn University after standing trial, even though he was acquitted of the charges. In the end, Parker lost in court and of public opinion when his court documents went viral in 2016. Rather than demonstrating sympathy for the victim who committed suicide after suffering from mental illness stemming from her alleged rape, Parker's supporters claimed he was a victim of racism because he was accused of raping a white woman. Several articles were published comparing Parker's fate to that of Casey Affleck, who settled multiple sexual harassment claims and still won an Academy Award. But the comparative justice arguments have no validity unless the cases compared are the same. Affleck was accused of sexual misconduct, not rape, and both cases were settled out of court with victims that are still very much alive. The fate of Parker's victim, coupled with his lack of remorse, was enough to sway public opinion, derail the success of his debut film, and push him back into obscurity. When a black celebrity is accused of sexual assault, it is customary to mention Hollywood's most infamous white sexual predators, Jew Woody Allen and Jew Roman Polanski. Allen continues to work as a film director after marrying his former lover's adopted teenage daughter, Asian, and being accused of molesting his adopted daughter. Polanski is an award-winning film director and convicted statutory rapist that fled the U.S. before sentencing, but continues to work in the industry. Well, he was in court this week in L.A. trying to get out of this thing so he could come back to the United States and make porn movies. Yet in the world of entertainment, for every Woody Allen and Roman Polanski, there's an R. Kelly or a CeeLo Green. Singer and music producer R. Kelly evaded conviction after being charged with 21 counts of child pornography resulting from his leaked sex tapes with an underage girl. Entertainer CeeLo Green pled no contest after being accused of drugging and raping women and only receiving probation. Both Kelly and Green maintained careers in the recording industry. And I think they were black. There's a well-known culture of misogyny in Hollywood, and it's time to address it. It's not justifiable to dismiss Cosby's sexual assault accusations because some famous white men have eluded criminal conviction for years. While it would be ideal if Hollywood blacklisted artists that commit sexual crimes, it isn't going to happen unless the public demands change. Those arguing for Cosby's freedom, and maybe working for jury nullification in the name of comparative justice, are campaigning for his right to assault without consequence, simply because he is black and susceptible to racism. As a rape survivor and a woman of color, that argument doesn't fly with me. That's the person who wrote this article. Not me, I'm not a black woman. A desired racial equality within the criminal justice system does not negate human rights of a victim. Rape is a violent crime. Rape victims don't need your comparative justice arguments. We need you to fight with us to ensure perpetrators are prosecuted. And, of course, they should be. I agree with that. But if we're separated as a race, the black and white race, if we're really separated, we won't have near as much of this problem. No, 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 no. No, less than 2%, the percentage of rape cases that result in a conviction, only 2%. The average time served for a sexual violence conviction is only 4 years. That ain't right. I agree with the women on that. Rape convictions are so rare there is no reason to waste energy debating how the ethnicity of the rapist could impact their criminal proceeding and whether they will receive a heavier sentence than their white counterparts. The real issue, the fact that no one should be raping anyone, and if they do, they deserve to go to jail, is getting lost in the process. And also, it's not right for women to entice men beyond their ability to control themselves either. You know how that goes. You know how that goes, too. Survivors deserve to have our voices heard, our stories believed, and our pain recognized, without being traumatized by attitudes of rape apologists. Every time you emphasize the plight of an alleged rapist, you minimize their victim's experience of trauma. Rapists don't deserve your sympathy, even if they happen to be famous. Well, I agree with most of that, but when women dress up like many of them do, in the scanty clothes and boobs hanging out and butt hanging out and everything else, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. Men are prone to be men, and even though it's wrong to get involved in any kind of rape, I can understand why they're enticed. And women know what they're doing, too, many of them. Well, let's talk about this Scalise guy again, that I guess is still in the hospital. Congressman, supposedly David Duke's buddy. In a pre-recorded report on Thursday's New Day, CNN correspondent Randy Kaye repeated a discredited claim that Republican Representative Steve Scalise 15 years ago spoke to a group founded by white supremacist and former KKK leader David Duke. As if the assertion that he spoke to the group were not in dispute, Kaye recalled, quote, questions were raised about the speech she gave to a group led by the former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke back in 2002. Well, let's see what else we got here. Kay began the report by recalling that the Republican congressman has a well-known love of baseball, and then moving to recounting his history in Congress. The CNN correspondent soon got to claims about him speaking to a white supremacist group, as she continued. Quote, in 2014, after House Majority Leader Eric Cantor lost his primary, Scalise jumped into the race. But during the campaign, questions were raised about a speech he gave to a group led by former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke back in 2002. She then added, Scalise told reporters, I detest any kind of hate group. For anyone to suggest that I was involved with a group like that is insulting and ludicrous. So does that mean he's not one of you? Seems to me he's not one of us, because everything we do is labeled hate. Not mentioned was the fact that in 2015 it was already reported that the man who invited Scalise to speak in 2002 disputed the account that the congressman spoke to Duke's group. The man who booked the hotel space for the group's convention, Kenny Knight, has claimed the event Scalise spoke to was a separate event for his local community group, which he held in the same hotel as Duke's group to take advantage of the availability of space. Additionally, a flyer for the convention shows no sign that Scalise was one of the scheduled speakers. The remainder of Kay's report informed viewers of the congressman's history of being a staunch conservative. Well, he's not a staunch racist. He's just a staunch conservative. Below is a transcript of relative portions of the Thursday, June the 15th, New Day on CNN. Wow. Now, you and I, and anybody else who is proud to be white and speaks up on it, is not ashamed to be called a white racist separatist. We're all haters. And of course we do. We hate our enemies and we love our friends. That's the way normal people operate. So this guy, this congressman, whether he snuck in there and said something at Duke's meeting or not is beside the point. He's detesting any kind of hate group, and that's you. No way they're ever going to say anything about you except you're a hater. So there you go. You want to hang out with those kind of two-faced sons of bitches? Not me. The minute a man will not stand up for his race, he's out. That's pure and simple. If he won't stand up for his race and his people and his culture, he's out. We want nothing at all to do with him. Now, there's a bunch of letters here that people sent in on this issue. One of them's interesting. All you have to do is Google for the truth. Steve Scalise spoke at an emergency preparedness meeting along with ambulance services and the Red Cross. The meeting was hosted by a one-time aide of David Duke. Well, that is a different story. Well, I saw this on the internet. I don't know whether it's true or not, but it says a news site praised a black lesbian police officer for saving the life of bigoted, homophobe GOP Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana. That's quite ironic, I think. Fusion hailed Crystal Grenier, a Capitol Police officer on Scalise security, for jumping in harm's way after an alleged shooter, James Hodgkinson, opened fire at a congressional baseball practice Wednesday. Crystal Grenier is a Capitol Police officer, was one of the two special agents on Scalise's security details yesterday who helped take down shooter John Hodgkinson. People at the scene said the two officers prevented an all-out massacre. Well, if she did that, then we have to give her credit to a female homosexual. It further says others also made similar claims over the social media, hailing the two black Capitol police officers for saving a white nationalist. It's getting pretty squirrely around here, man. I'm going to attempt to run a show by Max Kaiser on Russia TV today because, number one, it's the end of the week, and number two, it's a very important show with a lot of important information in there. Now, once in a while, he says something against racism, but just ignore that. That's not what we're interested in.
Howdy, I'm Max Kaiser. This is the Kaiser Report. Yeah, baby, we're in Washington, D.C., the swamp. We're in the swamp. We're in the murkiest, deepest quadrant of the swamp. Swamp creatures. So anyway, Stacey, speaking of Saudi Arabia, what's going on?
You know, it's been established that there are no such things as magic money trees, and yet we all live like we have magic money trees, so it makes sense that we have Potemkin economies, and our economies are run by Potemkin trade deals that don't actually exist. They're just announced. So the first half.
You got like a rap thing going on there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. It helps. It helps with remembering things.
I can't do the beatbox.
It's a memory thing. Yeah. You did a good job. That was horrible. Yeah. But so the headline reads, the $110 billion arms deal for Saudi Arabia is fake news. This comes from Bruce Rydell at Brookings. Last month, President Trump visited Saudi Arabia, and his administration announced that he had concluded a $110 billion arms deal with the kingdom. Only problem is that there is no deal. It's fake news. So they conspired to announce fake news. And I have a whole reason for why these are fake news. There are many of the deals that are part of the $110 billion has actually been announced a few times over the past, you know, 5-10 years. But nothing ever actually materializes. No contract ever happens. No delivery or even construction or beginning of the mapping out of these new projects for them. So we'll get into that.
Well, I mean, this is news to me. I had no idea. These are complete. The only thing I remember from that trip, Trump to Saudi Arabia, is when they're standing around that orb, that glowing orb, and they had their hand on the orb. Nobody really put forward an explanation about what this orb grabbing was all about. You know, well, I don't know.
He grabbed him by the orb?
Grabbed him by the orb.
Maybe. So, you know, the word we can't say in the news, maybe they thought that's what it translates into Arabic.
Oh, right.
Oh, we have one of those things you like to grab.
Right. They mistranslated the P word in Arabic, came like an orb, and they said, welcome, Mr. Trump, please grab our orb.
Yes.
I get it. They're orb grabbers.
So this guy at Brookings says, I've spoken to contacts in the defense business and on the Hill, and all of them say that the same thing. There is no $110 billion deal. Instead, there are a bunch of letters of interest or intent, but not contracts. Many are offers that the defense industry thinks the Saudis will be interested in someday. So far, nothing has been notified to the Senate for review. The Defense Security Cooperation Agency, the arms sale wing of the Pentagon, calls them, quote, intended sales. None of the deals identified so far are new. All began in the Obama administration. So one example he puts forward, for example, is a proposal of sale for 4 frigates, so-called multi-mission surface combatant vessels to the Royal Saudi Naval. This proposal was first reported by the State Department in 2015. No contract has followed. The type of frigate is a derivative of a vessel that the U.S. Navy uses, but the derivative doesn't actually exist yet. So,
well, if the Saudis don't have all these weapons, what are they killing the Yemenis with?
Well, they do bring that up, which is old weapons that they already have.
They don't even have the dignity to kill the Yemenis and the innocent Yemenis with new weapons.
Nope, but they do need more munitions. So that will be provided by the United States. The munitions manufacturers will be happy. I think that a lot of that goes through North Carolina, by the way, but I could be wrong. But the munitions, they do need. There
the
is
ordnance, the bullets.
Yes,
they
yes.
don't have that stuff.
No.
They got the long, extended, phallic, Trumpist, orb-grabbing device, but no actual projectiles to go kill Yemenis with.
You know, there's another deal that was announced many times. Actually, it looks like several times. And that's interesting because the first time I've heard of it in a long time, the THAAD missile system. We know we've sent that over to South Korea. China's not happy about that. and that's in order to protect from North Korea, but it could be just a ruse to close this deal, because they mentioned this. They said another piece is the Terminal High Altitude Air Defense System, THAAD, which was recently deployed in South Korea. The Saudis have expressed interest in the system for several years, but no contracts have been finalized. Obama approved the sale in principle at a summit at Camp David in 2015. So perhaps this is like, you know, prodding them into, like, sign the contract, dude. Like, here, look how it works.
Plus, THAAD doesn't really sound that menacing.
No, THAAD sounds like a country club.
Somebody made on, you know, Old Compton Street or Christopher Street here in New York City. You know, here's THAAD.
Oh, THAAD, I think about the golf course. There used to be a very yuppie name.
Chaz.
THAAD.
Brad. Biff. Okay, these are not menacing weapons, unless you're, let's say, in a sand trap at the 19th hole at the Westchester Country Club, and, you know, which would be impossible because there's only 18 holes on a golf course, you know, and you're thinking, I need a THAAD right away. I need my THAAD iron to get out of this 19-hole sand trap. The hell?
Well, I just mentioned China. We just mentioned weapons manufacturers. There is a big manufacturer of weapons and government defense contractors, Pentagon deals, and that is Boeing. And that is in this headline here. After laying off thousands, Boeing CEO says offshoring work to China won't directly harm U.S. jobs. Now, this is from Wall Street, and he points out that the CEO did say, by us sending jobs to China, they're building a plant outside of Shanghai to build commercial planes. It's not going to harm U.S. jobs. But this has been said, a similar thing has been said by German, French, European CEOs when they offshored their railroad technology to China. They said this is going to be a great deal. What happened is they lost the ability to actually manufacture in Europe. They lost the ability to innovate in Europe, and they sent the technology over there. So Boeing is the largest U.S. exporter by dollar value, faces a tough environment for commercial jetliners. In 2016, net orders dropped 13% from 2015 and 53% from 2014 to just 668 planes, the lowest since 2010. Through June 6, 2017, Boeing has just 208 net orders. So they've laid off or voluntary redundancies of about 30,000 workers over the past 5 years. But China has come in. They need thousands of new commercial jets because their economy is booming. And they, in order for Boeing to go there and build this manufacturing plant in Shanghai, they need to do a 50-50 partnership with a Chinese manufacturer. And in this case, it is Comac, which is a state-owned manufacturer. They need to transfer technology to China, to Comac, and they need to hire Chinese employees. So they're moving over there.
It was only a few years ago when the U.S. wouldn't let China buy Philips, Conoco deal, because they thought it would be loss of strategic partnerships and intellectual property, and they were all worried about the Chinese takeover of the American economy. So here's Boeing going to dump American technology that was paid for by the American taxpayer, by the way. You know, all these technology innovations filter through DARPA or other agencies of the federal government paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. So the U.S. is going to dump that into China so that they can create a competitor of American manufacturing and that those jobs then go overseas. Paul Craig Roberts has warned about this many times. You never get rid of the technology. You never give away the intellectual property rights like this. That's economic suicide. And it's happening on Donald Trump's watch. So all of his rhetoric about protectionism and jobs obviously was garbage.
Innovation happens on the assembly line. And this is what happened to French and German manufacturers once they sent their automobile manufacturing capacity, their railroad manufacturing capacity. When in the United States, there are many states and cities looking to build high-speed rail, for example, and China is like the tops because they basically were transferred the technology by French and German companies years ago. Now they're the best low-cost producer with high technology. In this case with Boeing moving over there, they said it has a Chinese partner, which is required in China to do business in China. There will be technology transfers, which is also required. The Chinese partner is state-owned Comac, which is leading China's efforts to become an aerospace giant to compete with Boeing and Airbus. Comac already supplies Boeing with parts for its aircraft. Comac's own jetliner, the C-919, which is the size of Boeing 737, completed its maiden flight a month ago. Muhlenberg, the CEO of Boeing, Dennis Muhlenberg, says he has no illusions about what he's doing. We know as we're investing there, we're also creating a competitor. As you mentioned with DARPA, it's the, getting this technology for the state, you know, to build these aerospace. It was the state sector saying to the private sector of Silicon Valley, of the universities around Silicon Valley, that they basically brought about much of the information technology, revolution.
Now, this is the insanity of the Trump administration, because he's going to build a wall over there on the Mexican border to keep out the minimum wage gardening jobs and the meatpacking jobs in Chicago, and while simultaneously sending the extremely high-paying aerospace jobs and the technology paid for by the taxpayer, the crown jewels of America, to a competitor, China. So the gardening jobs in America will be safe. Okay, thank you, Trump. We don't want Mexican gardeners in our developments anymore. And to get this working, we're going to get rid of all of our highest-paying aerospace jobs. So we'll now have unemployment lines filled with computer engineers and airplane manufacturing jobs. And great job. I mean, the guy must be smoking crack.
The thing is, our economy, our systems are devised on the fact that the government can't intervene in the private sector, even though Boeing most of their income and most of their wealth, most of their technology was developed by the taxpayer. They provide weapons for the U.S. government. They provide military transports and planes and Air Force One for the government, for the taxpayer. But we live in a free market, they say, so we can't stop anything. Same with Germany, same with France, when they sent over there all their technology. But China has a policy whereby you can't do any deals there unless the government is basically a 50-50 partner. Most of the big enterprises are government-owned, so you have to partner with a Chinese company, which, lo and behold, the Chinese company is the Chinese government.
So Trump was having dinner with Xi down at Mar-a-Lago,
yeah.
And he's like, check this out, Xi. He sends some Tomahawk missiles to Syria and blows up an empty aerospace deal, and Xi's like, wow, that's really impressive, Mr. President. By the way, before I leave, would you mind sending all of your aerospace jobs to Shanghai?
Yeah.
You know, you're such an impressive guy, and we want to be just like you someday, but we need all of your intellectual property and all those high-paying jobs. And Trump's like, seriously, I'm another piece of chocolate cake. I got more bombs than they came from. I got all the bombs in the world. I'm Dr. Strangelove.
And because he thinks he's made a deal, he'll say, we're going to sell that weapon system you just deployed. We could do it for a fraction of the price. He's like, I got a great deal.
Yeah, he's selling death on a cheap wholesale Shimada-based level. But it makes no freaking sense, obviously. And he's bankrupting the nation. And the China is cleaning up, making a mockery of his deal-making skills. But as long as Boeing, of course, they make bombs and weapon systems, and they figure that the profit margin on mass destruction is so high, they can afford getting rid of their civilian business.
I don't know if they have bombs, but they definitely do make the fighter jets and stuff like that. But
yeah, they're part of the whole industrial-military complex that we've been warned. Hey, we got to go to the second half. Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. Time now to turn to Tyson Slocum. He's the director of Public Citizens Energy Program. Tyson, welcome back.
Oh, always great to be here, Max.
All righty. So, let's discuss the wrath of Saud, the House of Saud. Saudi Arabia has basically declared war on Qatar. Now, obviously, oil and natural gas are a big factor in the region. What's your take?
Well, we're already seeing a big impact in the markets, especially natural gas. Qatar is the largest exporter of liquefied natural gas, or LNG, in the world. But this is a crazy situation, and Trump has been tweeting about it, per usual, and so this is just this internal spat about dominance between the Sunnis out of the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia and the Shiites and the Persians in Iran. And Qatar has tried to position themselves as kind of a deal breaker and a mediator. They've been siding with the Iranians in a number of different spats around the region, from Yemen to Syria to Palestine. And so this is really just a power play to kind of get rid of the ascension of Iran, which we had seen under the Obama administration, and try to curry favor with the old ally, Saudi Arabia, who I don't think has been a very good ally to the United States. But this seems to be a big foreign policy priority for the Trump administration. When he went to Saudi Arabia, you know, he gave this bizarre speech where he was talking about how wonderful the culture and the people of Saudi Arabia was and how important they were as an ally. And then he immediately goes to Europe and basically slaps Merkel across the face. So he's really trying to disrupt a lot of the alliances, and I don't think it's going to add to stability in the region, which is bad for a lot of reasons, but definitely for energy markets.
So it's a weenie waving contest.
Sort of.
All right, so you got Saudis, Muslim weenie number one. You've got the Qataris, Muslim weenie number two.
Right.
And during the period of OPEC and the rise of oil, Saudis were king. Starting 20 years ago or so, natural gas became huge. This put a lot of money into the bank accounts of the Qataris. Right. They started Al Jazeera English, challenging the narrative in the region. They started doing some harsh reporting on the Saudi regime. So suddenly Saudi says, okay, we're going to try to nip these guys in the pull them back a little bit. And this is interesting because, of course, if they're putting the Qataris in bed with the Iranians, that's a pretty formidable power. They could create an OPEC of natural gas.
You're absolutely right. I think your assessment is spot on. The crazy thing is that the United States, and Donald Trump specifically, seems to be taking an active role in assisting the Saudis in this effort to squeeze out Qatar and Iran. And that's what's so crazy and so dangerous.
That makes some sense because America has always favored terrorism as a instigator of their military-industrial complex. They love 9/11. They love Saudis having been responsible for 9/11. They practically, kiss their and say, give us more 9/11. This seems to be the policy. We love terrorism. We know Saudis are involved in it. Can you send more, please?
I'm not going to agree with you that the United States seems to love terrorism, but...
Well, why are they funded? Why do they sell arms to Saudi Arabia, who then sell it to terrorists, and they have the Westminster Bridge bombing, they have the Manchester bombing, they have the London Tower Bridge bombing, Theresa May kisses Saudi, Donald Trump kisses Saudi. How can you not conclude that they are, either they love terrorism or they are terrorists? That's the only conclusion you can make logically if you're not an ideologue or a partisan hack.
I'm not sure why this continued love affair and affection towards the Saudis is happening with the United States.
It's a death cult. I mean, okay, let's talk about energy policy for a second, because the energy policy in this America is a death cult, right?
Well, yes. I mean,
just said yes. Well, so terrorism is a death cult, right? So the two are equal, right? So ipso facto, using logic, that's the answer. They love death.
With Trump, yes, I think he does love death. But I don't think it's in the U.S. national interest to prioritize Saudi Arabia as an ally of the United States.
But America makes a lot of bad mistakes that is not in their self-interest.
Correct.
They are proponents of the prison industrial complex because of their deep racist roots. They don't like medical care for all because blacks might get medical care, because they're deeply racist. That's not in their best interest either. Right?
I mean, that's part of it, and some of it is also just corporate greed. It costs more money for for-profit healthcare corporations to provide insurance to the sick, to the poor, and that requires subsidies that wealthy taxpayers don't want to pay. And so, as a result, the Republicans want to side with their corporate masters and pursue corporate profit strategies in the name of national interest, and that is not in our national
interest. There's greed. I mean, Warren Buffett's greedy, but he wouldn't kill himself for a nickel.
No.
But I would say a lot of these folks would. That's America. Now, let's talk Turkey. There are reports of Turkish troops being sent to defend Qatar. Okay, this looks like it's adding fuel to the fire. Bring about a regional hot war. What would the energy and geopolitical landscape look like after... Okay, so how does the energy landscape look? Turkey gets involved now, siding with Qatar.
Well, I mean, Turkey's a big deal because it's a lot of important pipelines run through there. Turkey itself isn't a huge energy producer, but they are a conduit to move hydrocarbons from the Middle East, from Russia into Europe and points beyond. And of course, Turkey is a huge ally with the United States and other powers. And so I think it's a good thing for Turkey to come to the aid of Qatar. I think that isolating Qatar and Iran is not going to be good for the region. And so it's good that Turkey's, coming into their aid. But escalating these tensions, and again, this was initiated by the Saudis, by the Egyptians, by the United Arab Emirates, with the public backing of Donald Trump's tweets, we could see a lot of volatility in energy markets and in particular with military conflict. So I think we're going to see oil go for a little bit of a wild ride here in the next few months if things continue to escalate.
Right. So Turkey's kind of like has a foot in both, east and west. Literally, mm-hmm. they're on the gateway to either side.
Right.
And they're trying to get into the EU. It's they would like to get into the EU, but they've been thwarted to be in the EU. They're obviously so. It's kind of like Turkey is similar to Germany in that sense. So Germany is also now opened up a huge conflicted situation. Because, okay, Germany has 30% of their energy from Russia. Russia's aligned with Iran. Iran mm-hmm. is now aligned with Qatar. And Qatar's a huge gas play, and Russia's a huge gas play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Trump has told Qatar, basically, that we're on the side of Saudis, but the reason the U.S. has a military base in Qatar is to protect them from the Saudis. Now they're saying, basically, okay, that whole military base is the biggest military base outside of the U.S., okay, that is void, null and void. It's not a factor. So now there's Germany with 50,000 U.S. troops.
Right.
So Merkel's saying, okay, Trump's going to call me up and say, basically the same thing. It doesn't matter that we have troops there for some reason to protect you from the evils of Russia. So why wouldn't Germany just say, you're a freaking idiot, you're a nut. Why don't we just go with Russia, Iran, China, Qatar, right? I mean, those guys have all the energy. They've got all the nuclear, bombs. I mean, that's the force. I mean, is Trump doing like a Theresa May, shooting himself in the foot by being the spectacularly moronic?
Absolutely. He is setting back U.S. influence. He's going to be setting it back for decades. And, Angela Merkel in Germany essentially said that Germany can no longer rely on U.S. leadership in NATO or in the region. And so you're going to see Germany, they're already kind of going it alone with the euro, right? They're kind of single-handedly propping the euro up. And now you're going to see them take a bigger lead in terms of troop commitments and NATO commitments. And so what this just means is an evisceration of U.S. influence in places that the United States has historically commanded. And this is terrible. This is not putting America first. This is, as you say, shooting America in the foot. This is hugely counterproductive, and Trump is just completely out of control.
Okay, so the other side of the argument would be, okay, the U.S. is withdrawing from the world, essentially, mm-hmm. and they're going to just focus on domestic economy, domestic jobs, and what about that?
Well, I mean, we're not completely withdrawing from the world. We are aligning with the Saudis and touting. A lot of it is some fake investment numbers, but there is some real investment commitment that the Saudis have promised in the United States. Again, I don't really think that that's going to be the engine of our job creation in the United States, is relying on the Saudis. Trump now wants to build a solar wall on our southern border. So it is kind of retreating. It's this economic and ethnic nationalism that you're seeing out of Trump's radical inner circle. And that's just a disaster. Unfettered capitalist globalization doesn't treat American workers that well, or workers everywhere else in the world that well. But completely cutting off our borders to our democratic allies, to our trusted friends, is even more counterproductive. And so Trump's global vision of whatever that is really destructive. And he's doing enormous damage, and I think the media isn't focusing enough on some of the severe substance of what he's done, because they're distracted with all these insane scandals that are going on. But the real scandal here is this pursuit of insane policies that are going to eviscerate U.S. stature and standing around the world.
Yeah, let's stay on Saudi for a second. So Saudi Aramco, which is essentially the state oil company, mm-hmm. they're going to do an initial public offering and value the company at roughly $2 trillion. They can't do it in New York because they financed 9/11, of course. And now, despite Obama's veto, Americans can actually sue the Saudi government for the crimes, these mm-hmm. murders, the 28 pages of redacted material,
yes.
that point the finger at House of Saud for mass murder in America on 9/11. So what do you, you know, they, of course they get, they find acceptance possibly in London, because London places the relationship with Saudi terrorism, again, over their own population, because it's a death cult.
Right.
The Queen is a part of a death cult. Theresa May part of a death cult. Mm-hmm. They hate humans. But what do you see happening to this IPO?
I don't know. This IPO is absurdly overvalued. Well, there's been very little independent scrutiny into Saudi reserves, and that's because there's a lot of question about how sound the Saudi reserves are.
They're not sound because they're pumping oil. They're pumping water into the Gawar field because they're running out of oil. That's why they're selling this thing. It's a dog.
Right.
Okay,
right.
You know, but it's not going to stop Wall Street from pumping it literally to a lot of stupid pension accounts that'll be wiped out, and poor retirees are getting nothing holding their nothing.
Right. Well, they might. I think that we might see. I mean, right now I've been seeing where the Chinese are thinking about going big into the Saudi IPO.
For some concessions.
Right.
Anyway, we got to go. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, it's not that hard to understand if you read between the lines, and really you don't have to read between the lines at all. Trump is screwing us big time. The right-wing hero, the wonderful white guy, he's going to take care of it. Well, what do you think all those people are going to lose their jobs with the aircraft companies, all those white people? That's helping white people? Just by concentrating on the border? Bullshit. This guy is off his track. He is off his track, and somehow it's the capitalistas that are running the show, and they're driving the U.S. into the ground under Trump's leadership. So pass it along. Wake up these right-wingers and left-wingers to what's really going on here. If you want to help white people, you can't support Trump, that's for Christ's sake. You know you can't support Hillary, but Trump is, I think, he's doing major damage. All you hear about on regular television and radio is all these little brush fires and personal problems that he's arising. I think that's to cover up what's really going on. I think all this bullshit about Russia and American elections and all that's simply a smokescreen to cover up the big things they're doing, like this Boeing deal. If you want to help white American workers, you better come out full square against these corporate bastards. Most, and a hell of a lot of them, are Republican. They're going to run this, the right wing is going to run with this Trump deal right down into the rabbit hole, just like they did with Reagan. And most right wingers don't realize the damage Ronald Reagan did to this country. Well, I'm going to close out with our Freya's Day tune, song, dedicated to white females, man.
Blow me a kiss from across the room. Say I look nice when I'm not. Touch my hair as you pass my chair. Little things mean a lot. Give me your arm as we cross the street. Call me at 6 on the dot. A line a day when you're far away. Little things mean a lot. Don't have to buy me diamonds and pearls, champagne, sables, or such. I never cared much for diamonds and pearls, 'cause honestly, honey, they just cost money. Give me your hand when I've lost the way. Give me a shoulder to cry on. Whether the day is bright or gray, give me your heart to rely on. Send me the warmth of a secret smile to show me you haven't forgot. For always and ever, now and forever, little things mean a lot. Give me your shoulder to cry on, whether the day is bright or gray. Give me your heart to rely on. Send me the warmth of a secret smile to show me you haven't forgot. That always and ever, now and forever, little things mean a lot.
See you Moon's Day.
Declaration of War, November 25th, 1984. It is a dark and dismal time in the history of our race. An evil shadow has fallen across our once fair land. A certain vile, alien people have taken control of our country. When the day comes, we will not ask whether you swung to the right or whether you swung to the left. We will simply swing you by the neck. This is war.
Hey, boys and girls, it is that day. It's Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the bunker, so treat your lady right today and every day, if she treats you right, that is. Terrible Tommy here in sunny, warm Southern California. Yeah! You know, I lived out here for about 45 years. A lot of people don't know that. Yeah, long time. And now I'm back, and now I'm feeling some heat. That's okay. And don't forget to send your donations in for the radio show. We need your donations. And that's Tom Metzger, 315 East Esplanade Avenue, P.O. Box 1687, San Jacinto, California, 92583. You do that, and I'll be a happy boy.
Underground militia. I might even be your butler teacher, I'm the baker, I'm your future troublemaker, I'm the guy that used to date your little sister.
Whoa.
I'm the sister.
I even watch you when you play baseball.
Now you can spin your little stories till nobody will believe you anymore. And you can plot your deadly schemes and say it isn't what it means, but let me tell you what it means. This means war.
That's about a 4-minute long intro, so I figured we better get on with the show here. You've heard that a few times. And did you hear me say on there, we even watch you when you play baseball. Whoa, let's see, what we got cooking here today? We got quite a bit. Oh, you know that young man who's doing so badly after getting cracking wise over there in North Korea? I mean, I admit they're really bestial over there when it comes to people they don't like, but he wasn't from Wyoming. I don't know where I got that from Wyoming. He's from Ohio. So I want to make that correction before we get too far into the shoe. I guess they tried to make him a Manchurian candidate, but they went too far and screwed up his brain. Well, I'll tell you what. This all could have been avoided if we hadn't got into the Korean War. Remember, that's how we got into this thing. Over oil and trade and capitalista, you know. So we split that country in two. If we hadn't had the Korean War, it'd have been one country. Whether you like it or not, it may have been communist, may have been capitalist, may have been socialist, but we wouldn't have the mess we've got today. But people keep forgetting. They keep forgetting to go back to the original cause of a problem. You know, like the Civil War and all that. They don't read up on what really was behind it. And splitting countries up and regime change not only screws things up at present, but it can screw things up for decades and decades and maybe 100 years. Yeah. And these white boys are so usually liberal and everything, they trust everything's going to be okay, I'm okay, you're okay, and they go into these countries and they do something that's totally not acceptable in the country and they get screwed up. And that's what happened to this guy. Too bad, he'd have made a real good lone wolf. He could have gathered a lot of information for us. But he was never taught anything about might makes right. And when you don't know the score, you got a problem. Now they're blaming little old chubby King Chum Chom Chum instead of blaming people who don't seem to understand how you have to operate when you're in a foreign country. And when faced with a lion, don't stick your head in the lion's mouth. The way I got it, that guy ripped down a big political poster of their god leader there in North Korea, and that's all it took. You see, they worship that guy like a god, and anything like that, they're going to grab you. So if you stick your head in the lion's mouth, you got to expect he's going to chomp on it. Don't worry about things. That Negro basketball player, he's going to straighten everything out. And who knows, he might get it straightened out. Well, I see that false flagger, Alex Jones, is in the news with having an interview on the web. And if you don't understand that he is a false flag, you don't understand anything. I notice even some of my own subscribers hang out with Alex Jones. this some of that stuff about Hillary having a child porn thing in the basement of a pizza parlor that didn't even have a basement. And about these kids that got wiped out at day school out there in the East Coast, that didn't happen. Come on. You know, they continually feed crapola to the right wing. And a lot of their leaders buy into it just because it sounds wild. And it's a bunch of bullshit. It makes the right, it continues to make the right wing look like a bunch of crazy people. You got to check out these stories. Now, if you didn't think something was weird about him saying, Alex Jones and these guys saying, well, none of those kids died at that day school. Come on, that's not that hard to check out.